Hello and welcome to this Cloud of Data podcast with your host, Paul Miller. I have been following the emerging data market space for a number of years, trying to understand the ways in which some of the companies who are beginning to appear there relate to one another and how they offer a value proposition to customers. During this series of podcasts, I'm going to be talking to stakeholders from a number of the leading players in the data market space: Microsoft, Factual, Kasabi, InfoChimps, and a number of others. Each of these podcasts will be made available on the Cloud of Data website, as well as through iTunes and perhaps a number of other syndication routes. Please feel free to check back from time to time as new episodes become available. For the second podcast in this series, I talk with Chris Hathaway from AgData. His site gathers information on the locations of stores, hotels, and other locations, and provides it for sale via agdata.com. Chris tells us more. Chris, thank you very much for joining me for this podcast today. Before we get into some of the detail around AgData and your perspective on the data market space, can you tell listeners a bit about yourself and your own background, please?
Sure, yeah, and thanks for having me. It's great to talk with you today. I guess is what you call an accidental entrepreneur. I started in computer science in graduate school, and I'd had always an interest in data collection or putting together data from various sources, and had some experience with it in different positions, but then eventually kind of stumbled across this idea of collecting and selling data itself from the web, turning unextracted data that's just spread out on the web into something that's more consumable and usable for clients. And so I started it as just a little experiment on the side, seeing, well, if I have this data and I put it on the online, will people buy it? And I was going to grad school and working at the same time. And eventually it started growing to the point where I could do it full time, and I needed more help, and it kept growing, and there kept being higher demand, and our library kept growing as well. So it's just been slowly growing to what it is today, and I've just been kind of coming along for the ride.
Okay, good. So AgData, mm-hmm. if I'm an investor or a new customer, what's the elevator pitch?
Sure. Well, we consider ourselves probably the best source for store location data. It's an area that we focused ourselves on, that we can collect data particularly about locations of institutions or companies or stores, and we've collected those, and we basically sell that data on the web, and we have different ways that we sell it and in different packages, but that's our main core, is that we have high quality store location data that we sell online and provide for all kinds of various clients. And yeah, it's kind of as a sidetrack, I started out when I was in school, I guess it's more of a background, but I started out with a greater interest in the semantic web. That's where I kind of started my interest in data and structure in the web. This idea that if enough of the internet would adopt these standards in order to make their data consumable by machines rather than just readable by humans, then we could have this wonderful database underlying the internet, and information would be much easier to find. And as I studied it more and experimented with it more and learned more about it, it just seemed to have so many hurdles with it. And nowadays I see a lot of these larger companies like Google and search engines and other types who are turning to more statistical methods. Well, we can't get everybody to be structured, so we'll just do our best guess and use various statistical methods and pattern recognition to figure out, okay, this is a location, this is a product. Across the web, whatever website we see, we can handle it the same way and get some information out of it. And that's worked pretty well for them, I think, but it's still not perfect. There's a lot of errors in there and a lot of missing information, just because nobody conforms to the same consensus in the same way that data is formed. And so what AgData has done is kind of in the middle of that, to where we extract data particularly based on the source that we get it from. So when we collect a piece of data, we go to what we consider a primary source, and I'll talk about that a little later, but it's usually just a website, and we gear our extraction directly towards that website and extract it and turn unstructured data into something structured. And because we're focusing individually on those sources, we can guarantee a complete accuracy as far as that source is accurate. And so I've kind of felt like AgData is in a middle ground between those, between it, so that it's not as broadly applicable to the entire web, but for our specific domain, we're able to get really good, complete, accurate data for these lists that we sell.
Okay, so your definition of accuracy there is it's a 100% accurate representation of whatever was on the page.
So that's correct.
If the page said that black is white, you would accurately represent that black is white.
Right. And it's true that we are dependent then on these sources for the accuracy as well, which is why we're very particular about our sources when we collect a piece of data. So when we, for instance, we collect a list of McDonald's locations throughout the U.S., we don't just randomly search for McDonald's locations. We go to what we consider the primary source for that, and that is McDonald's themselves and the data they provide on their store locator. And, you know, we feel it's in their best interest to have good, accurate, complete data so that people can find their locations. And so we found that source to be much more reliable than a lot of other data providers will find, because a lot of times those will be gone through various levels of passing around and collecting and curating and checking, and it usually loses some information, where if we just go straight to whoever's most interested in having that accurate data, these companies themselves, we've found that it is a more accurate and complete representation.
Indeed. Yes, I think that's true. So in terms of accessing that data, how do you set about doing it? Is this screen scraping of a human readable web page, or are you doing something more structured than that?
Sure. Yeah, screen scraping is pretty close to what it is. We tend to try to avoid that word because it kind of has a negative connotation, unfortunately, since there are a lot of abuses for that. We do automated extractions based on patterns. Every single website is based, at least the larger websites, when they have a directory or a locator like that, there's an underlying data source. And they take that data source and put it in a template to make it human readable, and we're just reverse engineering that and using those patterns that they use to make it human readable in order to turn it into a database again, or a data set that's easily readable and aggregated together. And so, yeah, it's automated extraction methods, but it's very particular in the way that it does. It's not a broad hit of everything that a website has. We're very careful in the way that we extract and making sure that we get get the accurate information in as few queries as possible, and that we're respectful of the data and the website itself.
And presumably of any terms and conditions attached to that data.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Is that ever a problem? I mean, does McDonald's care that other people know where their stores are?
Well, yeah, it's a good question, and there is some legal precedent involved with it. We've done some research. Obviously, it's an important aspect to it if we didn't have legal grounds to it. And so we're very particular in the type of data that we collect, that we make sure that it's a public information and that it's a collection of facts. And that's where the difference lies. They can put terms and conditions on the content and copyright the original content on their website, but if it's a fact like where a location is or the phone number or just the store hours, even something that's just a fact about that location, then it's not copyrightable and it's not really owned by anyone. And so it's well within legal precedent to collect that data and repurpose it. We've done extensive research to make sure we're on safe ground there. And so we are particular about the type of data. We avoid personal data, usually, and we avoid any original content that's by these companies or copyrightable material from their websites. But as long as we stay within that realm, then we haven't had any problems so far.
And have you come up at all against the European database right? You know, what you were saying about facts being facts and not copyrightable is certainly true in jurisdictions like the US. But here in Europe, we get funny ideas around, you know, protecting the database as a work in its own right, which has caused some complications for other people down the line. Is it something that you've come up against?
You know, we haven't explored that area too much. You know, most of our data started out in the US, and we've started expanding mostly to Canada for our data, but a little bit into some European countries. You know, yeah, there is some issue about, well, okay, there's the data in itself, and then there's the way that the data is put together and what can be copyrighted, whether the fact that it's put in this list in a certain way, does that mean that you own that format of the data, or can somebody else take that? It gets into all kinds of issues, and we really haven't breached into that deeper level in terms of the European stuff that you mentioned. I mean, as we expand more over there, I'm sure we will look at it more in depth.
Yes, indeed. And hopefully before someone else's lawyers do too. Definitely. So, I mean, you mentioned there that your emphasis at the moment is very much North America and a bit Canada. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, is the US coverage pretty nationwide?
For each of our individual lists, do you mean?
Yes. And I guess your collection policies, you know, you'll take data from anywhere in the States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty standard and uniform across the U.S. And that's one reason has been easier to collect U.S. data, is because they are large data sets that are all contained within the U.S. I mean, half of these companies don't even touch outside of the U.S. anyway. And once you get into Europe, you can collect, you start getting different sites and different sources for each country and different languages and characters, and it gets a lot more complicated. And so we have run into some, we are a little more particular about where we'll go into that, just because it's a more difficult problem. And whereas the US, it's just, you know, we know very well where all the places in the US are, what all the zip codes in the US are. So if we need to check every corner of the US for a location, we can do that. And it's very well contained. Whereas, yeah, when we get outside of that, it gets a little more tricky. And we just kind of deal with that as the requests come along. But it is something that's starting to be more of an issue, because we have we're starting to saturate the amount of data that we have for the US. We've kind of got basically every major retailer, restaurant, hotel, whatever kind of chain in the US is basically already collected on our sites. So that's where we've been growing at the moment, and so it's become a few more challenges have come into that as we've expanded.
Okay. And, you know, looking at the sorts of data you have, you know, it tends to be by company, so a list of Starbucks, and then a list of Pete's Coffees, and then a list of some other coffee shop whose name I can't think of right now, Tim Horton, say, from Canada.
Sure.
Do you do anything to start pulling those together so that a customer could buy a list of coffee shops?
Sure. I mean, in a sense, we are kind of really a stickler, and this is more of me just liking to have that really complete unit of this is all of the Starbucks locations, and you know that if it's there, then it's in this list. And so we'll combine files together, and you know, we will do some custom work for clients, but we really keep everything separated by that company, because it just, you can't find that anywhere else. And you can get these huge databases of coffee shops, and they include a lot of local data for, you know, the local coffee shops as well, but you just don't know what's all in there. And we want people to know that when we sell a list of Starbucks, that's what you're getting, every single Starbucks in the US. And so, you know, we do package data with discounts, and we even have some larger subscriptions where clients can have access to our entire library for a subscription price and things like that. But we get, we start to push back a little when clients want us to just throw everything together into one file, because it really, we feel, has value as these individual units of locations. And of course we'll help in doing that, and anybody can do it on their own. But we want to emphasize that this isn't just a blob of data. This isn't just a database that they can, you know, fill up their back end with. This is specific units of data that is very discrete and very complete in itself. And so we feel that that's an added value and should be emphasized in our products.
Okay. And what does the data look like? Clearly there's a location in there, mm-hmm. A geographical mm-hmm. location, also presumably a street address.
Right. Yeah, all of our data has at least the address information, phone number, and we make sure there's a latitude and longitude coordinates, whether we can extract that from the site itself or we'll geocode it internally. But yeah, we're actually, because of the way that we extract and because we are collecting unique data sets for each company, we are able to add extra information for those individual companies. For instance, with Starbucks, we have a column that says whether there's Wi-Fi at that Starbucks or not, or McDonald's has whether there's a play place at the McDonald's or drive through. And that's because that's information found through their locator. It's structured information that we can collect specifically for that data set. And that's the other issue with combining the data sets, is that we feel that each one has their unique value with those, some of those added fields. And we want to keep that value with the data itself.
Okay. So what the client is getting from you is a file containing fields that are basically the fields they would see on McDonald's website or Starbucks website. You simply put that into structured form. So the only mm-hmm. thing you would add is the latitude and longitude.
Yeah, basically. And a lot of times we'll have things there that aren't obvious on those sites, like a store number, for instance, maybe hidden behind the scenes in the data transfer, but we can extract that as well. But yeah, we're not creating any data per se. We're just aggregating it. That's kind of where our whole name comes from. It's just aggregating this data that's already there and available, just not usable yeah. in the format that our clients want.
So who does buy it? How many people are in the market for a list of all the Starbucks?
Yeah, and that was kind of the one big question when I first started. Like, who in the world wants this type of data? I was looking for it and couldn't find it. Who might else want it? And we have really different segments of the market. Our biggest market is larger companies, enterprise companies or consultancies who want to use it for competitor analysis or co-location. Also anything along the commercial real estate process, buying, selling, owning, leasing, all that kind of stuff. They're looking for tenants to add to properties, or finding out, you know, what are possible properties and doing void analysis. There's all this stuff that I've learned about over the last few years in these different fields that people like to use our data for. It's been surprising how many people have been looking for this, and just it's very difficult to find this type of data. And we also have a more technical side of things who like to use it in as the back end of iPhone apps or web mashups and things like that. Interestingly, though, that the tech side of things aren't as interested as much in the quality or the completeness and accuracy. They're just looking to fill big databases so they can get on their user base. And so it's our kind of mission to convince them that this is important, to have these real complete data, so that when their users are looking for the local Starbucks, they're actually going to find it on their application. So, you know, it really varies from large. We have plenty of Fortune 500 companies that are purchasing and using our data, and then small suppliers or startups that are also finding use for it. And that's what we've tried to do with the product, is pare it down to the very minimum. This is, you know, really all you need is this list of data. Here it is, and you can purchase it.
Okay. And I'm looking on the website at the moment, and for example, there's a complete list of Walmarts, all 4,436 of them.
Yes.
When I buy that, am I getting a snapshot of Walmarts, or am I gaining access to a data file that I can then update later when a new one opens?
It is a snapshot, and that's why we have that last updated date. For instance, we last ran our extraction for Walmart in November of last year, and so that list represents everything that was on their site or from that source at that particular day. And yeah, we've really, again, we try to commoditize almost this data to where, you know, you're just buying this data and you have it. We will always, you know, we're always willing to work with clients if they do need updates in the future and putting together some sort of subscription. Or again, I'd mentioned there are some larger options to just have access to all the updates as they come in. I mean, we do update our data every 3 months, and that is available. It's just for our website. If you go into the website, you're just buying the data, buying it and getting out of there and making sure you have what you came in for. And that works for quite a bit of our clientele.
And in terms of accessing this data, what are the options? Is there API-based access, or am I simply going and getting a text file?
It's all really just, I mean, our standard format is CSV. You know, we're willing to customize that for if clients need it differently. But we found that that's just, you know, that because we have such a wide variety of use for our data, that's kind of just the baseline that everybody can know what to do with. For just for the non-technical users, they can easily open it in Excel. For more technical users, they can import it into a mapping program or into a database and manipulate it there. Or even for the real technical users, parse it out very easily. It's you know, it's a very standard and parsable CSV file. So you know, we have looked into the idea of providing API access to it, but we're busy enough trying to just have the data and to not have to worry about the scalability that might require of, and yeah, it just hasn't been enough of a demand to go into that direction. And there are a lot of, you know, if somebody is just looking for an API just so they can search for local coffee shops nearby, then there's a lot of resources out there for that already, and we're trying to hit a slightly different market.
Okay. Now, I think that there's a growing problem with these facts online, that there's almost an expectation that I should be able to get them for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I should just be able to go and get list locations of Starbucks or Walmart, right, or whatever it may be, and I shouldn't really have to pay. Now, looking, I mean, your prices aren't high. So
right,
those 4,436 Walmarts, $49.
Right.
227 Nordstrom's, $29, according to what I'm seeing at the moment. So it's not excessive.
Right.
But you still have a job to do to persuade the casual developer who's building an iPhone app that they're going to
right,
sell for 99 cents,
right,
that this investment is worth it. How do
right,
you start doing that?
Well, I mean, part of it is the fact that there just isn't this type of data specifically isn't available anywhere else. They're not going to get it from Walmart, and they're not going to find it really anywhere else in this type of accuracy and this type of format. I mean, if they're looking for free data, then we're not the right company, really, because if they're looking for that free data, then they're sacrificing something else. They're sacrificing usually quality or accessibility, and maybe that there's a technical hurdle they have to overcome to get access to a free data to some of these larger providers. And you know, I mean, it's kind of funny, we have suppliers come to us and say, we sell to Walmart. We put in all the Walmart stores. I'm using them as an example, but it could be several. We have a good relationship with this company, but we can't get a list of their locations. They won't give it to us. We've even had people within companies buy their own data because it's easier to get than going through their own bureaucracy to get a list of their locations. So somebody from Target may come in and say, well, it's easier for me to pay $30 and get a list of Target locations and try to figure it out in my own, within my own company. And again, that's an example. I don't know for them particularly, but to have that data collected and put in this format for this particular domain is fairly valuable, and most of our clients are willing to pay. you know, we do have a section of free data that we collect, but it's more like a marketing tool, and it gets into more of the stuff that should be free. I would say and agree with that things that are more general data that's not as important commercially, you know, like basic geographic information or political information, government information, or even information in entertainment and things like that. And so, you know, I think there is a difference between data that should be paid for and data that shouldn't. And when there is a value because it's not available anywhere else, because these companies aren't just handing it out, then they're basically paying for us to go and collect it, because it's a lot easier than them going and copying and pasting it from every single directory page on their own website. Because, I mean, we've had clients come and say, this is what we've been doing. We've been copying and pasting into Excel over and over, and you've saved us hours and hours of time just because you've done it in an automated way, and you can just get us that data for $30. So it's, you know, there's a market that's going to look at our data and not be interested because they feel like they don't need to pay for it, and it's not important for them to have that type of data, that accuracy and that completeness in the unit. But for most of our clients, it's usually a deal, and it's really saving them a lot of time.
Does the way that you collect the data create a problem for you as a company in terms of, I don't mean this in a bad way, but in terms of building trust in you as a company? Say, for example, those lists of Starbucks locations that you got from Starbucks, say half of them are wrong.
Right.
Because Starbucks did a bad job. And again, it's an example. Starbucks, don't right. sue me.
Right.
That projects badly on you because I bought the data from you. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with building trust and building a reputation in your brand when actually you're relying upon data from people over which you have no control?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the real short answer is that we trust in the free market interests of corporations, that they are putting out good data. And that's why we focused on this type of data, because there is that fact that it's hurtful to their business if they have bad data out there. So by and large, they have accurate data. You know, we have a pretty low barrier of entry. You were mentioning with prices, somebody can buy a list for $20 and see what we have. And a lot of people do. And most of our larger clients, they'll start out that way because we don't have that recognized name necessarily. And they found us just by searching on Google for that specific list they were looking for. But once they do and they clicked it and they realize, this is something valuable, then they start buying more, and or they hear from it from a word of mouth. I mean, it's, you know, we've been able to grow without much restraint because the quality of the data kind of speaks for itself, and we haven't had too much of an issue. Now, that isn't saying that there hasn't been an issue, and sometimes it's our fault. There's a technical issue that we collect incorrectly, or there is some error or different way that a company has collected the data online. And so we strive to keep our customer service in a very small business like setting, to where we are personally addressing these problems as they come up. Very open about what we're doing and how we're collecting the data. And so, you know, we can very clearly explain, okay, this is where we're getting it, this is why you're seeing these errors. If that creates a problem, then, you know, you can have your money back. We really haven't had to do that very much. But if there's that transparency in the way that we collect the data and the way that we put together these products, then usually that level of trust does increase from that. And we've had fairly good luck with that so far.
Right. Now, in the data market space of which you are a part, it falls into some broad camps. There are companies that simply provide access to individual data files to download. There are companies that will begin to join some of those data files together, you know, the every coffee shop in the States example.
Sure.
Then there are companies who provide tools, so you can actually start working with the data on their site or within their environment. Mm-hmm. And finally, I guess, there are companies who will actually provide you with answers. You know, you want to know where to put a new coffee shop. I will tell mm-hmm. you on the basis of all these things, put it mm-hmm. on the corner of that street there. Mm-hmm. At the moment, you're very much the first of those, aren't right. you? Individual data sets.
Right.
Do you see a scope for your company to move into any of these other areas?
I do. And it's funny because at least two of the two latter ones you mentioned are pretty big clients of ours. These people who they take our data and then they make sense of it for their own clients. Everybody needs that data to start out with. And it's, you know, if you don't start, it's like garbage in, garbage out. If you don't start with the right quality in the beginning, then it doesn't matter how good of analysis you do, you're not going to come up with good results because it's not based on the most accurate source. And so, you know, we've really fully focused on that, and it's become something that most of our clients rely on. And so while we do deal directly with a lot of companies directly in their own departments, we also deal a lot with consultancies and agencies that take our data and then make sense of it for other clients. And we have really good relationships with some of them who provide those tools or services. It's certainly the next step for our growth, I would say. You know, as soon as we feel that we've got it's something we're starting to add on even now, but not to much extent. We really just, you know, if we can just keep that focus on the data and having that as a quality product, then things have been going fine. But it is where I see the growth is that, well, there's a lot of consultancies that are just taking our data and then giving answers to their clients. What if we can get those answers directly? Then we can somewhat remove that middleman and provide a more valuable service and start to grow our business in that way. So yeah, it's definitely something that we are interested in, but we don't want to jump into it too quickly. I think that may happen a lot because those are more exciting things than just grinding out the data and getting a good quality. Companies may jump to that more quickly and say, we can make sense of this for you, but they don't have the important data to back it up. So that's where our focus is right now. And I don't see that changing in the very near future. But as soon as we've really accomplished that well, and I feel that we've gotten that down, then we probably will expand to that in a more serious way than we are.
Okay, because presumably the margins in providing answers are an awful lot higher than the margins in providing facts.
Yes, in a sense. I mean, our margins are fairly well done too, because it's all digital data, and so we don't necessarily have a cost besides the resources it takes to collect it. But once we have a piece of data, we can sell it thousands and thousands of times without any extra cost on our side. So we do well on our margins as well, even though it is smaller units and it's less working with contracts and big sales processes, because we just have this data and we can sell it as many times as needed, then we're fairly comfortable with that as well.
Okay, you're doing fine.
Yeah.
you mentioned, you know, the fact that you're approaching saturation in the mm-hmm. States. Mm-hmm. So do you then have to go on and do the whole world? Or is there a point beyond which it doesn't actually make sense to continue running a company from Washington State?
Well, you know, because we're working online, our location really doesn't matter. I mean, we're a virtual company already. I'm in Washington State, but we have 14 full and part-time employees, and they're all over the U.S., Texas, Idaho, Pennsylvania. And so we're working in an online space, and our physical geography hasn't really mattered that much, even if we go into outside of the U.S. Now, when I say that it's our data is becoming a bit saturated, I mean, we've grown our data fairly organically. Usually a client will come in and it's a list we don't have, and so we start adding, and we add it for them custom, and then it becomes part of our library. That's how we've grown so far. We've got over 1,500 lists right now. basically done through that way. And it's been surprising to us how we always feel like we're starting to reach saturation, and then our clients come with all these more chains and location lists that they want. There are also some areas that are still within the U.S. that we haven't really touched that I think would still fall within our scope. One example is, and we've done a little bit of it, is doing brand list locations. So if you are, for instance, looking at the Nike website and there's a where to buy link for when you're looking at the shoes, that turns into a store locator, which is our specialty. And so now we have not just a list of Academy sports locations or sporting goods chains, we have a list of everywhere where Nike is sold, according to Nike. There's also a complete other area that dealing in commercial property, because we have these companies who own properties and have a directory of properties that are locations. And so there's a whole market there that we've started to step into and somewhat, and I think there's a lot of potential there as well. So, it sometimes feels like we have everything, and then I start looking a little more, or we start looking a little more, and there's just so much more to collect out there. And I don't see that running dry anytime soon.
And how does the pricing work? How did you arrive at those prices for a data set? Is this what the market will bear, or is this just, thumb in the air, or is there hard science behind this?
Yeah, I wish. It's been one of the more difficult challenges, because there's no standard out there. There's no baseline to compare it to, and ours particularly. I mean, there are a lot of data providers there, but the big ones, it's all, it's very contract and license based, and you get into these big deals that are thousands and thousands of dollars, and it doesn't really define what you're getting access to. And so there was no way to compare that to just buying a list. And so, it started off really cheap. I mean, I was selling things for $5 at the beginning, and then just started, it's a lot of trial and error and working with clients and feeling, kind of putting feelers out there and what kind of pushback am I getting? If we raise the price, is it cause an uproar, or? And we've arrived at the prices that we have, and every once in a while they change a little bit, but there's really no method to it. It's just kind of what we found people have been willing to pay. We don't want to do it too cheaply, because then people start worrying about the quality, but we do want to be open to that entire market space that I mentioned before, from the large Fortune 500 companies down to the smallest startups, or even somebody doing something for a school project. So we're not trying to rip off people. We want to keep the data. We're obviously trying to make money off the data, but we don't want to price it more than what we feel that the work we're putting into it is worth.
Okay. Data market, we've mentioned it a few times, mm-hmm. and clearly it's the overarching theme for all of these podcasts in this series. Mm-hmm. But it covers a whole range of different things. The only thing they actually have in common is that they've got some data.
Right.
is it a meaningful and useful term, or is it marketers or journalists or analysts having latched on to something and they just need a label for it?
It's tough. This was one of the questions I've been kind of thinking about, and I read your article, and there's a lot of it I agree with. And as kind of one of those data providers that these data markets are trying to get into, and we've done a few, a little bit with that. We've put our data in some of these marketplaces, but it's hard to see it going beyond, just small-time sellers and data providers. The thing is, we've spent a lot of time on our data and a lot of resources in collecting the data and putting it together, checking the quality, making sure it's a good product. Putting the storefront in front of that, or selling it, is actually not a difficult part, especially nowadays with all the tools that are available fairly easily to build a website, to build a storefront, to take payment. That is not the hardest part of our business, and that's what the data markets are trying to pitch as their value add. Is there, you know, you collect the data and we'll do the rest. Well, the rest is the easy part. The data is what we've really been spending time about. So it's hard to spend all that time and effort and then kind of pass on the reins and let someone take a cut, because there's a real value to the data and we've worked really hard to collect it. And if it's just about, you know, putting it on a store, in a store, then that's something that we can do. And, you know, if there does come a point where a data marketplace is the place that everyone goes to whenever they think I need some data, then that is something we would certainly want to be a part of. But I have trouble seeing it getting to that point, because, you know, people don't search for data sources. They don't search for data markets. They search for a list of Walmart locations, because that's what they're really looking for. And that's where we come up. You know, they find our page directly from that. We've been really focusing on that long tail of search. And so they find us and buy the data, and then, and they're happy. As soon as they start not doing that, as soon as customers start acting differently, then, you know, we'll reassess. But we found that it's just valuable to have the data there and available and findable, and then, you know, and the clients come and they get it.
So aren't you a data market then?
In a sense, I mean, we're not an open data market, I guess you could say. We sell data, and we have a you know, but it's all our data. We don't sell anyone else's data. We often have people come and say, "Hey, I have this data. Will you buy it from me, and then you can use it?" And it just doesn't work. We have a very particular way. Then we collect the data and check it for quality, and we have automated ways to keep those updates accurate. And we have a whole team that checks each individual list before it's published. I mean, that's probably half of our workforce is just quality assurance and publishing the data and making it available. And so it's not really a system that we can integrate outside sources and outside data with. And so, you know, we're a store, but I don't know if we're a market in a sense, because not anyone can come in and sell their data.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that distinction makes sense. So what if Walmart rang you up tomorrow and said, actually, we've got 4,500 stores, not 4,436. We just haven't updated our website yet. How would you like us to just send you the data? Would you say no?
Yeah, we've had that type of thing before, actually, where a client has gotten the source of data and say, I got this from Walmart or whoever it was. You can have it to check your own data. And yeah, it's tempting, but we do say no, because it doesn't fit within our pipeline, and we can't just, I mean, then all of a sudden, every time we need to update that, do we have to go back and ask, can we have a new version of it? It simply doesn't work. And fortunately, there isn't that much of a difference. And again, these companies are very, you know, it's important to them to keep their data updated, and we count on that. And it's worked for us so far. There has been instances where we've had to, you know, I had to look at it things. And in fact, there was one time where I did call a smaller company because their website was just not put together well, and our client really wanted this data, and they actually just sent us the data, and then we send it to the client. I don't think we even charged for it, because we didn't really collect it. But by and large, the data sources are good because they're those primary sources, and we're able to fit it into this very customized pipeline that we have to make sure that turns into quality data on the other end.
Okay, good. And how much of a human process is involved in that quality check before a data set goes out?
Yeah, well, I mean, we can't check every single piece of data that we come in. We can't check every line, but we do spot check, and we check for any errors. I mean, we build an extraction process, and ideally we build it once and then we can just run it whenever and it'll always get the newest data. But websites change, and so our patterns and our extraction breaks and we have to fix it. And so that's part of that process, just making sure that what we have matches what comes from the source. And you know, when we're updating 1,500 lists every 3 months, that's a lot of resources that have to be put into that, and then also taking the data and putting it on our site and putting it in various places where our clients can access it. So you know, for being automated extraction and automated data, there's a lot of manual work involved, but not in the actual collection, because you know, that's where we trust the ability for computers to be comprehensive.
Yeah, indeed. Now, turn it, changing direction a little bit. Right back at the beginning, you mentioned your personal interest in the semantic web and, mm-hmm. you know, some of the promise there was in that space.
Right.
Some of that's beginning to come true now, mm-hmm. You know, through, I guess, things like schema.org, which mm-hmm. Yahoo, Microsoft and Google are involved in, through things like Good Relations, you know, an ontology where shops are beginning to mark up some of the products that they offer.
Mm-hmm.
Are you beginning to see any of that have any impact on your business? Good or bad?
Not really, honestly. And I'm following it just as closely as anyone because it is interesting to us. And I support that type of thing. Even though it does cut into it, the fact isn't... The time it would take for the type of data that and the companies that we collect data on to adopt all of that is plenty of leeway for us to figure something else out. And it simply isn't happening. Every once in a while, we'll see a company that does give away their data in a more open format. But it's not even always the best data, or it's not always up to date. There's maybe missing some fields. And, you know, our clients just trust that we have the full, complete data better right now. And you know, it may come to that. And that's why we do have these options for growth that we turn into more of a, you know, finding insight over the top of the data rather than just providing the data itself. But we haven't even seen any need for that. I can't think of a time where a client said, well, I was going to buy your data, but I found it here in an open format, because it just really isn't there. And you know, I think it should be. You know, I've values and ethics, I think, in the data field myself, and I think data should be free and open and available. And that's kind of what we're doing. We're making money along in the process, but it's a process, and maybe it will get there someday, and we'll just adapt as that comes, but we really haven't seen anything yet.
Okay. I mean, certainly Best Buy is one example where they're embedding mm. some of this structured data in their pages, mm. so store mm. locations and things. That needn't be a bad thing for your business sure. model at all. It may actually create a whole set of new opportunities up a level.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, we always like it when these companies do embed those tags and things, because it makes it easier for us to extract the data. And the fact is, the large majority of our clients don't know what that is or don't know how to get to it, even though it is in those nice tagged formats. And so that's kind of what we're doing in providing that service. And for, I mean, the gap between, you know, a lot of just people who are there, you know, their company's GIS analyst, and they're just trying to figure out where these things are, to understanding how to access these tagged locations through APIs, and it's a big technical leap, and there's not really anything connecting those right now. And that's kind of what we're doing, is saying, well, this data is out there, and it is address data and it's phone number data, but you don't want it out there, you want it in this Excel spreadsheet, and so here it is.
Yeah.
So you know, we always love when companies are more structured with their websites, because that makes our job easier. But that doesn't necessarily mean that people are going to go to the websites instead of us, because it's still not in that consumable format for what they're looking for.
Indeed, yes. And I think that's a a common story across a lot of these semantic technology-based projects and products that they're, you know, they're advancing the state of the art, but there is still a need for intermediaries to turn it into something that everyone else can use. And
exactly.
That's the kind of thing you're doing.
Right.
Sounds good. Okay. I'm conscious of the time. We're
sure,
almost
yeah.
out of it. Have you got any sort of closing thoughts before we wrap up?
You know, I think there's a lot of opportunity for the type of thing that we're doing. We've really picked a specific domain that we found worthwhile, but and it's become profitable for us. We haven't really had any issues with that. And I think there are a lot of other opportunities like that out there, but I think there needs to be more of a focus on quality when we're talking about data. Because there are these floating databases out there, and I'm using location as an example because I know it more. There's this database that's like 14 million U.S. locations that everybody seems to have or seems to have access to. And when I see that, I automatically think, nah, it's not that good. And we've heard from a lot of clients that there's a lot lacking in that type of data, simply because it's come from who knows where, and it's a lot of third-party sources. I mean, I've literally seen companies who they say they tear apart phone books and scan them in, and that's how they put their databases together. And there's, I feel like there's a lack of emphasis on the quality of the data and where it's coming from, and I think users can recognize that as well. And I know that I've used apps before and things that, and I look at them and I just, you know, as soon as I see that error or it seems really weird in the data or I can't find what I'm looking for, it starts to lose trust in that application or that service. And so I think there is great opportunity for data providers, but there needs to be a real focus on quality, because it's the data's out there. It takes some work to get to it. And those who are willing to put in the work, and we feel like we're willing to put in the work to get the quality data, are going to be successful at it.
Yeah, indeed. Good. Well, thank you very much for your time, Chris. That's been a great conversation, and I hope it fits nicely into the series as we move along. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.